la ta ta da la ta ta da. I wish I knew the words to that song. I woof a parade. Let me do that. Get everything organized here. If there's anything I hate, it's disorganized people. I just tell you. That's one of the great things about our time, you know. We have a real fetish about that. That we can get everything organized. Everything's going to straighten out. We'll get it all put together. And, you know, funny thing. I was speaking of getting things straightened out. I must report that there are a few good signs in the wind there. There really are. I was reading a reviewer in the New Yorker this week, the current issue that just came out today, and this reviewer was writing about a movie. I believe the reviewer was Brendan Gill, and he was writing about a movie that has been just recently debuted here in town with fantastic fanfare, and he entitles his review, War as Hell, Yes Indeed. Which I think is a great way to title. And he goes on. He says he awards it the most disappointing movie of the year. Palm. It gets the most disappointing. He says this thing comes on. It takes the entire continent of Europe as its theme, and World War II is its scope. And it says such magnificent truisms as war is bad, and makes people kind of rough and all kinds of things. And he says, you know, it's the sort of thing that when he was 12, he found out with a certain surprise. But anybody over 12 knows very well. But when a gigantic movie maker comes along and says it with $4.5 billion worth of movie film, 117 actors and 68,000 infantrymen all hired from the swamps of Italy, it gets to be a little tedious after a while. He says, at first you can't believe that's all he's saying, and after a while your incredulity turns to outright laughter. And, gee, you know, maybe I'm not the only one. It is true, though, that most movie makers today are discovering basic things which everyone knows from the age of 6 on. Like, it's not good to hit people. You know, I think most kids know that's true, you know. And you really shouldn't shoot each other. And they come on with gigantic fanfare. And usually you hear the spots for this particular type of movie. And now, one of the most important movies of our time, dealing with the entire scope of man himself. Yes, featuring Bridget Bardot, Gregory Peck, Anthony Perkins, and all other important people of our time. This movie faces head-on life, love, sex, war, victory, defeat, and all everything else. Right head-on. By God, it goes. It's fantastic. Now showing at the Paramount Theater, uptown, downtown, and in your neighborhood, and at the motels, showing everywhere. Soon to be seen on Late Night Old Movie Time. Don't wait, though. See it now. You know, these guys come on, and the thing that, you know, it's so funny, what makes it so, yes, they sound that incoherent. What is so funny about it is that you'll hear actors coming in, 19-year-old actors. I heard this one lout being interviewed on this station, by the way, and he's saying, you know, I believe that people should be reminded that war really is one of the worst of the crimes that man can take part in. I believe this is an important movie because this 19-year-old, you know, he never got closer to war than 1 6-month piece of training at the side of a pool in Palm Springs. And, you know, I think people should be reminded from time to time. And all the guys sitting out there, you know, with one ear shot off are sitting there saying, yeah, that's right.
Putin movie, the King Kong's basic themes of our time. Yes, eternity, the abyss, life, love, sex, all dealt with in a forthright, honest, startling, factual way by Bridget Bardot, Gregory Peck, Audrey Hepburn, Cary Grant, Anthony Perkins, Anthony Quinn, Anthony Pierre, Pierre Anthony, Anthony Anthony, and other important people of our time, not to mention Robert Goulet. If if there's one movie you see in 1964, by God, this had better be it. Carol F. Zanuck takes on the entire Bible.
By the way, did you know that one guy is filming the entire Bible? That ought to be a crowded cast. That's all I got to say. I'm sure, though, that he's going to cut out a lot of the long, tedious, unfamiliar passages, like that well-known recording company that turns out 50 great moments in music. A lot of those tedious patches that look right out at you and say, Dad, there ain't no turning back. There's going to be plenty of turning back in that movie. I can just see Brigitte Bardot playing the golden calf. we're living in great times, I'll tell you. You know, speaking of that, as long as we're here, and we might as well face it, we've just gone through probably one of the great orgies. The Christmas orgy of the child worshippers. It's just the truth. One of the most fascinating sides of the kids of today is that almost every 11 and 12-year-old kid reads Playboy. Oh, he does. Oh, sure he does. Don't get all alarmed. I mean, he knows more about women than the Playboy editors. I know some of those Playboy editors. And I know some 10- and 12-year-old kids, so don't get worried, lady. Your kids' morals are not being undercut. There is something else that's being undercut. That the kid is being taught through reading various magazines of this kind. He's no longer reading Boy's Life, you know, where the epitome of materialism consisted of being able to buy a Boy Scout hatchet. You know, with a Dan Beard leather case, you know, with the official Boy Scout emblem on it. Now the kids are not only reading Playboy, you see, they hurry past the centerfold. Because one thing about kids of 10 and 12, they're still saying, oh, that's all that love stuff. They're getting on to something else important. And it is this, that almost every kid of 10 and 12 and 13 years old in the new affluent suburban society, the Bucks County, the Westport, the Westchester County world, that almost every one of these kids has not only Playboy taste, but he has the Playboy knowledge of the brand name. So it's very difficult today to give a kid a Mickey Mouse watch when the 11-year-old kid is thoroughly conversant with, let us say, the Omega world. He says, what I want is an Omega Seamaster, Dad. And, of course, what's so sad is he's got it, you know. That's true. It's very hard to slip over on a kid anything less than a pair of Dax slacks. Oh, yes, they're very brand name conscious. You know, the kid starts out at the age of 3 being told by, what's his name, Bob something, the guy with the big grin, to be sure to ask for Wheaties. Oh, you know, the guy that keeps jumping in and out of swimming pools and grinning insanely, and he keeps saying it contains Super G for super goodness, that all of us Olympic jumpers and swimmers and hollerers and hitters and fighters, we all eat this stuff all the time. You know that guy. What is his name, Bob something? He used to call it Reverend something, but I think his flock complained. The otemeal eaters in his flock got pretty teed off about that. Yeah, he was Reverend there for a while. Yes, of course. You don't remember that. See how quickly you forget that? That Reverend disappeared awful fast when the agency moved in. Because a lot of the atheists were getting pretty sore, you know. They were stopping eating that stuff. You know, it's had religious connotations. But nevertheless, he epitomized. So the kid at the age of 3 is down there yelling he wants with the thing with a Super G. You know, he doesn't want just cereal with the cornflakes. He wants Super G. Or he wants, all the way on up. So by the time a kid is 11, he is very, very hip on various brand names of things. And it's very difficult. Oh, it really is. I know a person who said, you know, what am I going to give my kid? He said, I myself, I've got this old Timex here with the Mickey Mouse hands on the side. They're pointing it out there. And he says, and once in a while, it rings. It dings off the hours once in a while. He said, the big fat one, and Minnie comes out and waves at me. He says, but the kid wants an Omega Seamaster. He says, now, I was planning a year or so after I retired to indulge myself in an Omega Seamaster, but now I got to give it to the kid. No, I'm telling you the truth. I says, well, how old is this little squirt? And he says, oh, he's going on 11. You know, he tells time good now. He'll be able to tell it very good now because that little lout is sporting a 23-jewel Omega Seamaster that's fit to dive 300 feet below the surface of the Atlantic. So he desires. Oh, and I know another kid, because, you know, these things get... It's a matter of taste. Now, you can't foist off on a kid a bottle of pop anymore. Oh, no, this kid is thoroughly conversant with Schweppervescence. I mean, he doesn't drink pop. He drinks... Oh, yes, of course. And oh, yes. Now, like the same guy says, you know, he tries to give the kid lunch meat sandwiches when the kid says what he wants braised Westphalian ham. He read about it in the food column. You know, he's not going to stand on. So the old man is down there eating the liverwurst, and the kid is with the 7 cents a slice, you know. So. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure many a parent out there does not know what kind of a monster he's growing. And, of course, the thing is, all the other people are going to say, well, you know, kids were always like this. Oh, yeah? The brand names for kids were different from the brand names for adults. Yeah, they were. Sure, I mean, a kid would be told, get the red top high tops, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, yeah, they used to have a thing called, get Keds. That was a kid brand, Keds. You know, there were various kid things that, now that's the adult brands. Now the adults are wearing the Keds, and the kids wearing the Omegas and the Dax. So it's changed a great deal. But speaking of greasy kids, this is WOR AM at FM, New York, and we got a couple of things we better do here. Among them is Mandarin House. I'm going to make a New Year's resolution that I'm going to get bombed out of my skull at least once a week on Mandarin House Chinese food. It's Oriental food. I mean, I'm sure that one day they're going to make this stuff illegal. Because you get a glaze over your eyes, and you sit there, and you have these fantastic euphoric visions of great mushrooms growing out of your toes. Just fantastic. For only $2.50, and the fuzz can't bust you. In fact, the next table has got a table full of fuzz sitting there shoveling it in. So this is the Mandarin House. If you never tried Mandarin food over the big New Year's bash, I would suggest you make the scene. It is great. And you'll find one up on 2nd Avenue, just north of 57th Street. That's Mandarin East for the chic type. And for the rest of you, you strugglers, you wanderers around on the knees of your corduroys, we would suggest the Mandarin House down on 13th Street between 6th and 7th in the Village. The Village. They have a little bar there, and they serve ordinary stuff, you know, ordinary stuff, as well as the more exotic Chinese wines of rare vintage. Okay? speaking of New Year's Eve, I don't know why I'm feeling so flippant tonight. Speaking of New Year's Eve, we have with us tonight a suggestion for what you can do for New Year's Eve. Sounds pretty good. William E. Martin presents at Philharmonic, Jazz at Philharmonic Hall in Lincoln Center, a big jazz concert there. Gee, I haven't been to a good jazz concert in a long time. You know, I may make that scene, come to think of it. But it's Jazz at Philharmonic Hall in Lincoln Center, which should be a good place to hear jazz from. They have John Coltrane Quintet, old Eric Dolphy will be blowing, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, and the Cecil Taylor Jazz Unit. He's a good man, by the way, and highly underrated. He's working in a very difficult field these days. And if you're looking for some good jazz, that's New Year's Eve, December 31st at 8 p.m. And it'll be over just in time for you to rush out and get a drink and start getting bombed. That's at Philharmonic Hall, Lincoln Center. The tickets are $360, $490, $590, $690 at the box. Whole range of seats there. And you can get them at the box office or the Jazz Record Center at 107 West 47th Street. 107 West 47th Street or at the box office. That's New Year's Eve, Gold Coltrane. Okay? All right, now let's get on. You know, speaking of the child worshippers, which we have plenty of in our world today, I would say, though, that it goes a little further. I don't think that the child worship is on an equitable basis. I think that it is much more female child worship. Yes, I believe that today the worship of the female child has almost has approached Madonna-like dimensions. It really has. You'll see it in almost all of the lady magazines. The little golden girl, the kind of snotty look on her face, standing on the cover. Boy, there was one on the cover of a magazine just before Christmas. I wanted to hit her. I mean, it was supposed to be cute. That little crumb is standing there looking. I'll tell you, she had the most knowing, rotten look, just the kind of look. Oh, every guy knows that look, that rotten, knowing look of the chick who thinks in terms. I mean, immediately you jump in a cab when you're with this girl, no matter whether you're just going to go 10 feet, you know, in the cab. That kind of girl, you know, the kind of girl who insanely and incessantly, no matter where you go, says, oh, I forgot to buy cigarettes. And you're in this place where the cigarettes are $4 a butt. You know, immediately you have to tip everybody. And you know, she's just got that look of complete irresponsibility, that her responsibility is to accept everything. That's her responsibility of life, and complain. And so here was this picture. I wonder if any of you saw it. What was that ladies' magazine that had? The Journal? Woman's Home Companion? I can't tell what you go. Let's Go? McCall's. Oh, well, McCall's has got that little girl syndrome going full blast over there. Wow. Was it McCall's? Are you sure? Oh, you don't know. Well, then quit saying. I'm just saying that there was a cover of a little girl wearing a pair of angel wings, and let me tell you, they were polyethylene angel wings, if I ever seen it. And this little chick looked out. Every time I passed her on the newsstand, I cringed. You never saw such a smug, rotten look. Yeah, and I guess, and you can only assume that the people who put that on thought it was cute. You know, they thought it was an attractive look, and it was that one. Get that look off your face. You know, you could just hear the mother say, will you wipe that look off your face? And the little kid gives another snotty smirk, and then, pow, you know, you know, that kind of scene. Well, here's this little chick, you know, looking, and then every time I walk past the newsstand, I cringe. You know, I'd say, ooh, boy. Ooh, you know. Well, there's been several magazines that have. Now, I'm beginning to wonder whether or not, though, it is. Of course, there's no question about it. There's a genuine hate girl thing running through many of the magazines today that is not related at all to this, except, I suppose, peripherally. The same people who love little girls hate women. Mull that one over. I've observed this many times, that the people who absolutely. Who absolutely break into a cold sweat and just get down on their knees when they see a little 7-year-old girl, almost invariably, many of them, I shouldn't say as a general rule, many of them cannot stand grown-up ladies, grown-up girls. They just hate girls, the grown-up kind. Because you see, little girls don't turn you down for dates. They just stand there and simper. Whereas the big ones say, oh, are you kidding? You know? So you know, it's a kind of wonderful thing. And thin guys with very, very narrow velvet pants always get very excited over very thin little girls with wistful eyes. You know, there's one guy who paints the world's worst painting with those gigantic, ridiculous looking eyes. They're not at all human, you know. That's what's interesting. Those paintings of those little girls and the wistful little boys, mostly little girls, are about as human as Mickey Mouse is about mice. You know? And you've seen those things. Oh, boy, I break out into a real rash when I see those. That's the most devastating anti-art kind of painting these things are. And yet they sell by the bushel baskets. They're just atrocious. But nevertheless, they sell. And it's all part of that same thing. Now, there is going through, though, many of the magazines, a definite anti-woman slant. Have you noticed it, Ed? You haven't. Well, what do you read, for crying out loud? Oh, Ed, look, Popular Mechanics has not been anti... I mean, don't ever try to talk to an engineer about life, you know. If you can put it down on a schematic, you're in business. Ed, Popular Mechanics is not what I'm talking about, although... But one of the big male magazines is getting so outrageously anti-woman that on several occasions, and looking at their cover here the last couple of months, I could not believe that they were presenting this cover as an example. You know, here's a pretty girl. It just obviously it was an attempt to destroy a girl or to destroy all women by making them look as rotten as they could. Here it is, under the guise of a cute picture, you know, that kind of thing. Of course, it's a sad fact that many people in the theater hate women. They love heroines, but they hate women. And so you'll find often you cannot understand why the women look so strange on the stage. You'll watch a musical, and the girl will kind of, it's hard to keep your, it's hard to even get them in focus, you know, when there's a bunch of girls in a big musical number, because they look like they're these big giant balls of velvet with a foot sticking out, or big things full of burlap, and you can't see the chick at all. And the men, of course, are all running around the stage with very tight things, you know, and tight pants, and everything that, you know, it's all there and shining with great big lights on it, but the chicks are all kind of covered up with big hats and feathers and flowers, and they squeak. It's very hard, you know, to try to keep the... I've suggested to several people who print playbills that they ought to put numbers, you know, so you can tell the players. You know how they do out at the horse races, you can tell. But, you know, speaking of child worship, though, this thing is getting pretty big. There's a great article out of Bristol, out of England. Do you have my English music there? I'll give you... Oh, no, I think this apocalyptic music is very good for this. Yeah. Ah, boy, you apocalypse did it, all right. I'm telling you, Beethoven's really hung up on that thing, all right.
Bristol, England, October 15th. A Canadian ice cream salesman says his wife, playwright Patricia Jowbury, has given birth to a new messiah. She did so last September. We had a daughter, said Spalding Steele, 47. He said a guiding spirit told his wife of the Messiah's coming. Mr. Steele was in bankruptcy court to explain debts of $36,900 for renovating a house in the village of Withington near Cheltenham. He was said to have debts totaling $67,454. Steele's wife, well known in Canada as a radio writer and dramatist, has had plays produced in London and New York. She is a spiritualist medium, Steele said. She hears and sees clairvoyantly, he said. In the 18 months up to last September, he said, his wife wrote, and we quote, 45 major literary works dictated to her by the spirits of Shakespeare, Shaw, and Tolstoy, and has now given birth to a messiah. They hope to sell the works to cover the cost of the house renovations and to establish a new world religion. But none of the works has been sold, he said, unfortunately.
Listen, Mr. Steele, you're not alone. I know a half dozen people who feel that they, too, have given birth to a messiah. The Reader's Digest tells them so. You have a talented child in your house. Your little tyke is reading. He's collecting the center foldouts of Playboy now, and he's only 8 months old. You know, while we're on the subject of talented children, it's a nutty world. It's getting nuttier by the second. Angry child lovers call up? Or one? Was it a child lover who said children are all right to be worshipped? Why? No reason. Just shepherds should get off the air for saying such rotten stuff. I see. The clear reasoning of the true reader. I see. All right, yes. All right, indeed. Well, I'll say this, though, that child worship has all kinds of connotations. This is not the only society in which this has occurred, you know. Oh, no. No, no. This is an old problem that's been going on and on. But it's particularly a problem in a society that believes the way most people in America believe, that man is innately good and that society destroys him. And so he has the illusion that a child is an innocent little creature, whereas the child is, as a matter of fact, most generally, the only truly uninhibited killer in the block. That a child will pull the wings off anything that is movable and that has wings that are roughly removable, given a 15 or 20 second opportunity to do it, and it is a fact. So naturally, in a society that believes that society is bad and that adults are corrupt, which we do believe in, and of course we also believe that youth somehow is a far more golden thing than life itself is. And in fact, we also believe that youth is life, which is another interesting problem. Almost every one of our movies, for example, that very few people are shown having any kind of sexual involvement, unless they're rotten, sick, dirty old people. Very few people are having any kind of sexual or even emotional involvement who are over the age of roughly 19. It just never happens, you know, it's never there. And if it is, it's usually a Walter Houston December romance type thing with overtones of sadness and he's about to go kind of thing. And so it's okay for Audrey Hepburn to make the scene with him because it's beautiful. You know that thing, the middle of the night syndrome, you know, with Frederick March and all that sort of jazz. But this is part of a kind of transference problem where if you notice that on television commercials, for example, very few people are ever seen enjoying anything who are over the age of, 20, 21, something like that. You know what I mean, that indeterminate nymph age, the TV age, what is it? I mean, it's the golden orb age there. You know those guys that were running around in those beer commercials. And once in a while in the background, they'll show one lout. And he's there just to add the funny line that everybody laughs at. He says, ha-ha, that's right, he hollers in the cigarette commercial. And we know who's really right. It's this beautiful chick in the front foreground with the flint profile. And it's the guy with the ball-bearing eyes in the foreground. They're the ones that are right. But then again, that is part of our society. You just cannot believe in a society that has the attitude that ours has towards children. That they can be capable of anything, evil at all. The old concept that the child is father of the man has been reversed in our society. That we do not believe that mankind is a unit. We believe it consists of several distinct segments. Youth, that's one segment. We also think old age is another segment. This is like the used Kleenex division of life. We just throw that away. It's still around. We don't quite know what to do with it, but it's there, you see. So they wander around out there in outer darkness, and believe me, there is no outer darkness more outer, nor more desolate, nor more complete than the outer darkness of an older person in America, a society of children worshippers. And it is a very complete outer darkness, and the kind of outer darkness that is hard to fight because it's a kindly outer darkness. You know, where people say, Ma, I'll tell you what we'd like you to do. We have a chance to buy that little place in Phoenix where it's warm. And so the next thing you know, Ma is in Phoenix with the sound of the vultures circling overhead. And all that's true. You know, the old nothing could be more. You know, it's interesting. I wonder how many other societies. I bet. For example, in France, they would not believe that in America, they have old age communities. Where it's totally admitted by society that you have no place in society anymore, and that what you have to do is to go to this place where all the other old people are. It's like an old automobile junkyard. The old automobiles have no place at all on the street, you know, with the new Cadillacs and the new Ferraris. So they put them in this people junkyard, which is always, it is said, of course, that it's for their own good. It's absolutely for your own good, and you'll like it. It's warm there all the time, and it's far away, which is a very good argument. We can't get there very often, you know, and you like being on your own, and it's good for you to get out there on your own. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, here's this guy, all of his life has been concerned with ideas, and he's been fighting and struggling. How can you get involved in shuffleboard? You know, how many times can you go fishing and pretend you dig it? Or how many times can you sit there and look out of the window in the kitchen and pretend that the biggest thing in your life is the next batch of cookies? Oh, boy. And you know these pictures. Have you noticed the pictures that they show of people who have just cashed in on their giant retirement income check? You know, the girl who looks, it's always a girl. It looks like a woman of about 22 with a gray freight wig on. And she's standing back at the convertible, and here's this guy. He looks roughly like Well, he looks maybe a year or two older than Anthony Perkins. And what they've done is dusted his hair a little bit on the edges. You know, he looks a little gray. And he says, why, who would have thought? Who would have thought just 15 years ago that I would be retired, and now finally I've discovered, and me and Emily are enjoying life down here in the old age people's place, down here where the sun always shines, where we fish, where we sit and yell at each other, where we can't stand to look at each other, where we haven't gotten a letter now for the last 2.5 years, where the only mail we ever get is from the gas company, and we sit and wait and wait, and once in a while we get a mortuary ad. Once in a while they send us an ad for a new big cemetery just north of Orlando, and we sit and sit and sit, and my store talk, my store bought teeth just rattle along there. But that's one of the things that comes from a child-oriented society. You know, speaking of, I suppose that the apologists, of course, it runs through our newspapers constantly. That the more quote liberal a newspaper, the more it refuses to accept the fact that a child can be guilty of anything. The minute a 17-year-old kid beheads 7 people, immediately the newspaper starts getting out its trained staff of psychologists to talk about how rotten his parents were and how terrible his mother was and how awful his home life was. And of course, you know, it's part of that child worship syndrome. In any society, the icons or the gods are incapable. The way you can tell a god, you know, is a god is truly incapable of sin. Now, he's capable of peccadilloes, but it is not called a sin. He is, because he is a god, he is beyond retribution, actually. This is a true god. Now, the gods, in a pantheistic society, is the word pantheistic? Yes, I think it is. A pantheon of gods. Pluralistic, rather, is what the word I'm looking for. By pluralistic, it's a system where there is more than one God. We have several, you know. We are not a monotheistic nation any longer. And just like the ancient countries that had many gods, there were gods that were, you know, more godlike than others. It's the truth, you know. If you know much about the Greek myths, you know that the gods, there was a ranking system of gods, you know, Ed. But all the gods had one thing in common. They could swing. They could do anything they wanted to. Many of them were very evil. They did all kinds of things. But they were beyond any form of justice. They were beyond any form of retribution. And so it is with the child in our society as a true god. This is also true of our public showbiz figures, who also fit into that pluralistic theology that we've developed. We have all kinds of gods, and they do not necessarily have equal ranking. For example, a featured player type god can only have maybe 4 or 5 divorces before you get tired of it. There was a great line in a little offbeat, wasn't an offbeat story, but just in a casual story where it was describing Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burke, you know, this whole brouhaha about their divorce and marriage and all that jazz. The great line said, Miss Taylor's parents always attend Miss Taylor's weddings. That was a great line. Which shows that they're real good parents, you know, somehow. It gives a little homey touch to the thing, you know. And after all, they've been to many a wedding now. And then, you know, you get so that you kind of look forward to the next one. And I'm sure, you know, the old man, he gets a new tuxedo for everyone, and it's an outing. You know, I like to see the old folks enjoy themselves, and I like that good American family togetherness scene. Well, this, in a sense, says something about the untouchability of the gods of our world. Now, there are other kinds of gods, of course. There is probably the most important god today is the showbiz god. Then we now have a new group of gods, and this is, you might say, the literary, it's a hard thing. This is an unclassifiable type of god, but let's say it's the literary, intellectual, passionate, angry god. Now, these gods are gods who themselves are incapable of any kind of evil. They just do not, they're not capable of the ordinary venery. They're not capable of the venal thoughts that you and I have. They're not capable of the little dishonesties. They're not even capable of being wrong, which I think is great. Now, this is the kind of God who is the brilliant cartoonist satirist or the angry race writer. These gods, you see, have detached themselves from society and are in the position of shouting at society, and so hence are unassailable. You never can talk to one of these guys and say, "What about you?" You know, you spend all your time spending money in the big clothing. You know, you got a big Cadillac and you do this and that. You get $5,000 in appearance. What right do you got to talk about to these guys who are doing stuff for commercial? It absolutely makes no dent. So we have many kinds of gods in our world. And like most societies, our society is divided into different sects. There are people who will worship at the star shrine and will not worship, let us say, at the shrine of Norman Mailer. So because that's not their sect. And they will say to the Norman Mailer or the Baldwin worshiper, "Well, I don't begrudge a man his religion. I happen to be a Mary Martin man. I'm a Rip Torn man myself. I'm a Tennessee Williams man," and whatever that particular. Then of course there is the child worshiper. The child worshiper in a way cuts through many of the various other sects. This is like the overall religion, where even the worshippers at the shrine of Elizabeth Taylor, they can also worship at the shrine of Holden Caulfield and also at probably the most current one is Patty Duke. There's a kind of Haley Mills is probably a good example. Or you can say on the farthest limits, it is a kind of galvanic Lolita complex. The galvanic Lolita complex is really this one has all kinds of barbs. Oh boy, it really has barbs going through our time. I've seen more than one. You know who? It's intriguing to find that some of the most truly obscene movies are generally classified as good, clean family entertainment. Now by obscene I mean this. I saw one featuring a. I went to a screening here last summer, and it was one of the girls that I've mentioned. Well, now, this girl was playing, she is, at that time, was always playing an 11 or 12-year-old girl, but let me tell you, she was playing in, and this simple little ingenuous story, but boy, there was more going on under those skirts and under that sweater. The wind was blowing, you know, and all these guys, these bald-headed characters are sitting in the movie house with their mouth hanging open and their eyeballs glazed, enjoying simple family fun. And that's a new kind of titillation. It's a new kind of Lolita-ism. Very few guys had fantasies about Shirley Temple or Margaret O'Brien. But believe me, oh yeah, and of course if you can work up enough applause for it, it will be accepted. Yet on the other hand, the things which are so childishly inoffensive are generally angry producing things in our in our society, because we the thing we worship we don't want to ever concede has another side. We just don't want to concede it. And so the child can get pretty much away with almost anything that the child so desires to get away with. But, you know, speaking of the children's world, have you seen the little, there's a big brouhaha going on over in Mountainside, New Jersey. And I read to you, a summons was issued yesterday charging George Hompish of Cherry Hill Road with violation of the building code for having a treehouse on his property without a building permit. Well, now you see, there's the other side of the childhood world, it is a problem. Of course, one of the difficulties with the child world is that most of us try to emulate our gods. It's always been this way in any society that is deeply religious, that people will try to emulate the great god of fire, or they'll try to emulate the great god of rain, or whatever it was in any given society. And so you will find that more and more people, since we do live in a child-worshipping world, are emulating children, literally emulating children. That more mothers are trying to dress like their daughter rather than the other way around than ever before in the history of America or any given Western civilization segment. In fact, if you go into a man's store, one of the most interesting things is to go into the more advanced male store these days, and you will find that almost the entire store is given over to what used to be called the teenage dress, the teenage apparel. Have you noticed this, Eddie? That in almost any one of the really expensive men's stores, that a large percentage of the store, in fact, the larger percentage of the store, is given over to what used to be called teenage dress. Very jazzy sports shirts, very expensive jazzy jackets, and way in the back, no, really, I've been checking. I checked on it today. I was out looking. Way in the back, they have a little department for suits, you know, the grown-up people wear. And up in the front, they've got all this stuff. Well, it isn't for the teenagers this stuff is for. It's for all the guys who are making the teenagers seen themselves, who are, of course, maybe many of you who live in an isolated community or live and work in isolated jobs are not aware of this phenomenon. Perhaps this is more of a truly urban situation, that maybe you're not aware of it living in Jersey as much as people living right in Manhattan would be. But yet, for example, down in the Village, that on any given night, I would say the population swells probably by 150% by guys who during the day are dressed like grown-ups. You know, they're walking around working in jobs and one thing and another. And at night, they're down there with their chinos and their they've got their old battered tennis shoes on, their kids, and their black T-shirts. They're living down there. You know, they're kids now. They're living after work, you see. And so there's a real interesting slice down between their life where for half of the day they're pretty grown up and the other half of the day they're playing kid. Now, of course, the time goes on inevitably. It continues to go on whether or not you want to pretend it doesn't. It does. And so you come always to that eventual point of no return. You have to make your choice. Either I'm going to be an arrested development case completely, or else, you know, I'm just going to have to give in and just start walking around and looking at the sky. Because there's no place in this world any longer for people who pretend or who have any kind of maturity. It's a very bad scene. I'm not talking about age. I'm talking about maturity. If you start bringing ideas into the world, if you start bringing any kind of logical concepts into an illogical situation, you're put down as either hopelessly square or fantastically old, just unbelievably old, you know. If you say, well, look, Bob Dylan, for crying out loud, couldn't have built the Union Pacific. He's 22 years old. Dylan could not have suffered in the bread lines and fought his way from one coast to the other. You can't do that in Short Hills, New Jersey, you know. They say, oh, what are you talking about, man? Get out. So you wind up realizing, you know, that either you accept or if you don't accept, forget it. You're dead. You have to accept it like a smallmouth bass takes the whole plug. You can't take half. If you take the whole plug, fine, you're in the net. If you take half, forget it, man. You're never even going to get netted. Thousands of hospitalized.